We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This is WSV, the Solid Verbals Friday News Broadcast. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. My co-host is Dan Rubenstein. As always, you give us a download, and we will give you the world.
Whose dog is that? Is that Ty? Is that your dog or Bill's dog?
Yeah, that's mine.
Sorry. This is live radio, Ty. This is what happens.
We are brought to you by verballers.com. That is the URL for our Patreon, verballers.com. Go on out and check out the Patreon perks we have to offer. Also going out to solidverbal.com if you'd like to pick up one of the few remaining shirts that we have available for purchase, the Stay Solid Tee. And finally, last but certainly not least, solidsaturday.com. That is the shortcut URL if you want to tune into our Saturday morning live broadcast. You can do so, solidsaturday.com, every Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, courtesy of our YouTube channel. Before we go any further, Dan! Three things to know this Friday. LSU gets stung. Derek Stingley out for the year after foot surgery. Also, Power 5, Cincinnati, the Bearcats, by virtue of their win last week and their excellence all season, has catapulted up into the top five of the AP top 25. And finally, on your side, Bill Connolly from ESPN,
yeah,
a longtime friend, joins us for the show to talk about these topics and much, much more. Let's dive right in. Bill Connolly, ESPN.com, the purveyor of all things SP Plus and great college football content. We have talked to you for, gosh, it feels like a decade now, Bill. How are you?
Good, and I think it might be more than a decade.
Yeah.
Like, I want it like 09-ish, maybe? 10-ish?
So, okay. So you're before SB Nation. I mean, you're doing Rock M Nation.
Right.
But you're also at Football Outsiders.
Yeah.
And that's a part-time gig.
Yes.
It's a part-time gig. I think that's true. Because there was, back to the days of what, F Plus, where yes, it was a super band.
That continued to go for a long time.
Oh, man. I wonder if, I'm not going to bring it up if it's like a sore subject, or like, was there a big divorce? Was it just everybody's like, hey, we're going to do our own thing. That's cool. And everybody's happy.
I think like they're allowed to just, like I said, you know, do whatever with it. I mean, it might still be up.
Well, but what happened to F Plus?
Well, no, I mean, I think it's still probably, I think Fromo still maintains it.
Oh, okay.
Updates it.
Nice. So. Yeah, because I look at some of Brian's work just in terms of FEI and points per drive, which you also have in your formula. But I think that sort of thing is fascinating. For somebody as dumb as I am, points per drive is near as advanced as I can get, where I'm just like, I get it. You're adjusting for tempo and you take out garbage time. That's great. It doesn't explain everything. It's not super detailed, but it's helpful.
No, and I mean, being able to just adjust it in a couple different ways, per play, per drive, and you start to notice the teams that are better in one than the other, and you can start to piece together why that might be. And the differences between Fromo's per drive data and then, you know, mine is still mostly per play. So it is fun kind of getting to know that like how data tells you a different story from year to year.
You met with, was it Mike Gundy years and years ago? And you had a conversation with him about how he looks at numbers, and he was like really interested in drive data. Was that true?
Oh, who was that? I can't say Gundy and I spoke too much about data, but I can't think of who the first coach. I mean, well, the first one that really stood out in like the 09, 10, 11-ish kind of range, like Manny Diaz.
Right.
It was kind of an early adopter in that regard, and we had a lot of conversations through the year, so that was pretty cool. I'm trying to think like the order of them now has kind of been lost to me a little bit, but it's been interesting, and I do think that compared to 09, 10, 11, whatever we're talking about, the data literacy at the coaching level is just 1,000% better.
After a given week of games, Bill, how long does it take you to update your SP Plus rankings?
I have SQL, you know, make table things that don't run as quickly as they should. And I need to figure out exactly, I need to streamline those a little bit. So basically I get the data on Sunday morning and it takes two to two and a half hours to crank all the way through. And that's to update and you know, meld it together with all the big master table that I have been going back to like 05 and all that other stuff. But basically I'll hit the button and then like 2 to 2.5 hours later, I'm able to crank out SP Plus.
Is it the same computer as 09, like a relic that you can't ever lose, or have you actually tried to move this process to something new?
It is the ESPN work computer now, so it does.
Okay. Nice.
Basically, anytime I gotta do a bunch of the general ESPN computer was not intended to handle, like, you know, MySQL Workbench and a couple of other things, and so it takes a long time to set up all the new database on a new computer. But that's how the process goes.
Okay, so you got to go to space and pull it down and then do
that's
your
right.
updates, and it takes 2.5 hours to get.
There's a special generator in the backyard, like all the offices in New York during the hurricane. Everybody's
right.
freaking out because of the servers. Bill's got a server shed in the back that triplicates everything he's doing. Yeah.
Well, and actually, it was amazing. You know, this has nothing to do with me specifically, but there's a new data source. You'll see if you pull up a lot of the play-by-play, mm-hmm. you know, on school sites and whatnot, you'll see a new data source, Genius Sports, I believe. That wrecked like parsers across the nation because their data was just, it's just different and kind of weird. And I think they're still trying to figure some things out, but it was amazing. Like nobody knew it was going to happen. And right, the season starts and it's this new format and this new whatever. And it's taken a long time to kind of get the process going. It's still early in the season, still got kinks to work out.
So Bill, the biggest games of the weekend in week 6, obviously Penn State, Iowa, Red River Shootout between Oklahoma and Texas. There are a multitude of games that are interesting on about 1,000 different levels. From your perspective, as somebody who's obviously a college football super fan, from your perspective as somebody who's pretty deep in these numbers, is there one matchup to you that is more interesting than the others?
Well, I mean, it's hard not to say Iowa Penn State, right? I mean, that is OU. I mean, obviously OU Texas is big. It's the biggest Syracuse Wake Forest game in the history of college football.
I have a soundboard sound. That's how silly, but it's a big game.
It's a very big game, but it's hard not to say Penn State Iowa because I mean, number one, like anything involving Iowa is just super interesting because they don't change and you can't solve them. They get better at being Iowa in a given year. Like they were always good on defense, you know, that zone defense. If they had a good pass rush, maybe they'd rank a little higher. Usually averaged out in like the 20s in my defensive SP Plus rankings. They jumped to like sixth in 2019 and then second last year, another fourth. And that's even kind of filtering out the fact that, you know, they probably reeled in a few too many of those interceptions than would be, you know, the national average, so to speak. So they've probably been a little lucky. It doesn't matter. They're fourth in defensive SP Plus. They're awesome defensively, and they do the same thing they've always done.
Yeah. No, it's – and I felt like I picked Penn State this weekend just because I worry that that offense is going to have to play in a game where they are going to have to single-handedly generate the points needed to beat a really good, or at least good, Penn State team.
Right.
And I feel terrible because the strongest thing in the game has been in the game in this matchup is Iowa's defense and their ability to force turnovers and turn short fields into points. It's the clear most impressive thing. Is that something that is, and I know you talked a lot about the randomness of turnovers, is that a sustainable action plan?
Well, the way I've always tried to put it, or not always, but the way I've tried to hone my, when I'm talking about turnovers, it's basically, there's absolutely luck involved, but you still have some control over the turnover opportunities. The number, you know, the things you do to get into passing lanes, to get hands on passes, whether you keep your hands on those passes or not, you can still, what, you know, that is a quality thing. The number of potential turnover, expected turnovers that you have is a thing. It's just that, you know, sometimes those numbers still kind of get screwy. Like you can force, if you're good at rushing the passer, you're probably going to be more likely to create more fumbles or force more fumbles on average. But if you recover 80% of those, that's still kind of lucky. Same kind of deal. So with Iowa right now, with Wake, actually for my Friday column, I looked into Wake Forest. Like, I feel bad. Like there are a couple of Wake Forest fans who I really enjoy interacting with, and my numbers just hate Wake Forest. Just never, ever like Wake Forest. Part of that is because they are one of the few teams in the country, kind of like a Northwestern, where they do seem to win an above average number of close games.
Right.
They're kind of the anti-Nebraska in that regard. They're like 16-9 in one score games over the last, whatever it was, 5 years or so. So that's, I mean, that is something that I would love to be able to account for better, but it's so statistically unsound to do so that I don't. But like Wake Forest right now, also their expected turnover margins like plus 1.2. So a little, you know, they create more of those chances than their opponents. Their actual turnover margin is plus 7.
Yeah.
And that's probably not going to keep up. So that's kind of how I define it. Iowa's obviously the clear example here. They do play zone defense, which I think actually kind of helps your ratio, keeps more guys looking at the ball. So you're more likely to maybe have a better interceptions to breakups ratio and all that stuff. But I still, they're kind of on a hot streak right now. I don't think they're going to continue averaging whatever it is, like 2.5 interceptions a game.
There's a scene in the Royal Tenenbaums. I believe the kid's name is Dudley, who sees shapes and figures. I don't know if you've seen the Royal Tenenbaums, that this reference is lost.
Like 18 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So there's a doctor looking the way that he's trying to replicate a puzzle, and he's just totally off. And he goes, oh my God, how fascinating, how bizarre. Is there a conference where, I don't care if it's numbers, I don't care if it's your own viewpoint, where you're just like, nothing actually makes sense week to week? Is there that conference where you're just like, it's a futile exercise to try to explain who's good, who's bad, who might be good, who might be bad, who might be excellent, who might be briefly excellent? Like, is there a conference that just is delightfully nonsensical through 5 weeks?
Through 4 weeks, I had looked into that a little bit, just in terms of like SP Plus projections, like how well is it doing per conference? Because like it had a nearly perfect read on the SEC, although it's kind of underselling Alabama and Georgia at the moment. Okay. It had a great read on the MAC. It had a great read on the Big Ten. Like there are certain conferences where it's just done, it's been great, like game to game. It's great against the spread, all that stuff. Then there's the ACC and the Pac-12. Which, you know, it has been just week to week. It's been like, oh, well, I guess these teams are good. And nope. Okay, well, then it's these teams that nope, that's not it either. And it's still like trying to hone in on like what the hell's going on with this conference. And I do think, you know, over time, we'll start to know a little bit more. But anytime you step back and see that like Pitt's 13th in SP Plus and Arizona State's 14th, with losses to Western Michigan and BYU, a BYU that SP Plus doesn't even like.
the great Todd Graham confounding connection.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, so like just overall, I do think we're still trying to figure out not necessarily how good those conferences are necessarily, but just like who's good, who's for real here. And I fear that the answer for the ACC is Clemson, and that's going to be super annoying, but hopefully I'm wrong.
I like the idea of a new stat of like, who's the most uneven team in America? Who is like the most bipolar? I know that's a loaded term, but like, who is a team that is as likely to generate a really impressive, successful 5-play drive featuring explosion plays and efficiency and like a 3-play, 3-and-out, -4 total yards? Like, who is the most just Jackson Pollock-y team?
So who's
America?
The most Bo Nix team?
Yeah,
is what you're
totally. And it's Auburn, I guess.
Right, yeah, I mean, they've been, I mean, you just think back to what we know about Auburn this year so far. Like, that, you want to talk about absolute nonsense. I mean, yes, Akron and Alabama State, not great at football,
totally.
But beating them 122-10 is still something that most teams couldn't do. Losing at Penn State, whatever, it was a good performance. Trying really hard to lose to Georgia State. After Georgia State had lost by 33 to Army and by 42 to North Carolina, really considered that significantly, and then went at night in Death Valley with a Bo Nix who basically threw about 3 good passes. And they were incredibly memorable, wonderful passes, but he was otherwise not good at all, and they still won.
What doesn't SP Plus like about Georgia and Alabama? You mentioned that they're being undersold.
Well, I think it's just a conservatism mid-season kind of thing. Like, the best team can only kind of stretch so far out ahead of everybody else. So, you know, it projected both Arkansas and Ole Miss to cover last week. I mean, it didn't have them winning or anything, but it had them covering by 2 or 3 or 4 points, something like that. Has Alabama beating A&M by 9. Like, they're still the best teams. They're still ranked the highest. I just think it's they're further out there than what SP Plus has really kind of accepted so far.
If you travel for work, you know to pack 2 suits, business and swim. You know, with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/business.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
I mentioned LSU at the very top. They, of course, got the news that Derek Stingley is going to be out indefinitely. He underwent foot surgery. Clearly a big blow to their secondary. And that is already on a defense that has, to some extent, underperformed so far this season. So I wonder from your standpoint, just we mentioned the Auburn loss from a week ago. Auburn comes in, they snap a long losing streak in Tiger Stadium. We obviously had the loss earlier in the year against UCLA. That one was on the road. What is the state of LSU at the moment? How do you see the rest of this season shaking out for the Tigers? And more specific to this injury, how does it make you feel to know that Derek Stingley is not going to be out there? What does that mean for this defense?
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. They, you know, from a projection standpoint, without taking Stingley into account whatsoever, they're projected underdogs in 6 of their last 7 games. Now, a couple of those are tight. Like, this is for SP Plus, of course. It's like 2.5 points to Kentucky, 1.5 to Arkansas, like 3.8 to A&M. So it's not like those are basically toss ups, but they're still below 50% win probability for all of those games. And obviously a heck of a lot lower for like Florida and Alabama and even Ole Miss. So, I mean, if it doesn't like click this week, if they don't turn things around and get and not only beat Kentucky, but kind of find something sustainable, like that, like 6-6 is the best they can hope for at this point. And that's if they win their toss ups. So it's bad. It's bad. And again, that's without Stingley at all. Now, I mean, when you lose a guy from a mediocre defense, maybe it doesn't mean as much as if you lose one from an elite defense, but they're just not, they're not good. They just don't have that many standouts outside Butte right now. And this could be a doom situation here over the next few weeks.
And they can't run either.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And unfortunately for them, they don't have Missouri on the schedule. So they can't fix themselves.
Yeah, what
in that
happened
regard.
There? What happened? Like the Missouri like seemed like, hey, here's a promising, interesting squad after 2020.
Yeah, and I mean, I never, you know, really bought that. Like I was saying, six and six this year. That's fine. Yeah. They were like 60-something in SP Plus last year. So I never really bought all the way into being all that promising yet. He's recruiting great. So, I mean, it could be something down the line. But this year, it was just about go to a bowl. And that suddenly looks a lot less likely. But Missouri's run, it's the damnedest thing I've ever seen. Just in terms of when you're that bad against the run, you picture like just getting blown off the ball and pushed around. And they just seem to line up in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
Like guys looking for guys to block, but there's nobody there. And there's a big gap open for a running back to run through. So I do wonder, they just fired their D-line coach. I mean, maybe that was part of it right there. But I do wonder, too, like if you stereotype guys going from pro to college, you know, they have Steve Wilks is their defensive coordinator now, former NFL head coach, coordinator, all that. If you say that a guy going from pro to college failed, usually it's either going to be because he hated recruiting, which, I mean, I don't think applies here. But that or he was used to working with professionals and having unlimited work hours and being able to create complicated plans and all that. And then you go down to college and you're working with 19-year-olds and you're making them think too much and they can't run very fast or play very fast. And that would certainly seem to fit here. If guys are just like lining up in the wrong spot or going to the wrong gap or whatever, then that's, you know, I guess it's fixable technically, but they just seem lost right now.
It's coaching versus teaching.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't he switch up the defensive scheme for Tennessee, specifically for Tennessee? Yeah. Like change the whole thing.
Yeah, I didn't see like percentages, but yeah, there was a lot of, what was it, a 3-3-5, I think. They were changing their look and all this stuff. And I like the dude who had the 92-yard touchdown run. It was one of those where as soon as he got the ball, you're like, oh. And you could just tell like, oh, this is a 92-yard touchdown the moment he touched the ball. And that's not supposed to happen.
How many of the questions that have come through to you via email, Twitter sphere, et cetera, have been about Cincinnati's viability as a playoff team?
Well, it was funny. We kind of joked about it on Twitter, like as it became clear that they were going to finish off Notre Dame. And we were like, here we go. I'm already tired of all the arguments we're going to have. And then they started like just referencing the arguments. You had people in there. Well, I just don't see how we could include them if they don't. Well, you know, it became the argument that I said I was already tired of. So that's my fault. Like, don't even bring it up because you're not going to enjoy what happens when you do. But that is one of the. I mean, I think my stance on this is very clear, like where I come in on the whole the mid-major, the G5 thing in general. Like if we're in with Cincinnati this year, like if we're not going to do it, when are we ever going to do it? And maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe we'll eventually get our 12-team playoff after we apparently stall longer than we have any reason to in setting it up. You know, maybe it won't. I guess it won't matter then. But like. Pac-12 isn't going to have a playoff contender or participant. The ACC is not going to. Big Ten might eat itself alive. We'll have to see exactly who ends up with how many losses. Like if Cincinnati, who beat Notre Dame, a thing that only Georgia has done in the last 4 years, win in South Bend. They went up 17, outgained them by like half a yard and a half per play. Like if we're not going to. If that doesn't matter, if, as soon as they go to playing AAC teams, we're going to forget all about them. I mean, it goes back to the whole what the hell's the point thing here. Like, why are we even, why are we doing any of this if there's no way for them to make it? So we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to, of course, can they get in? Should they get in?
Right.
And then there's a whole second part of that conversation, which is how would they actually do?
Right.
And that's probably not fair because we've seen how other teams have, quote unquote, actually done against right. the likes of Alabama.
Yeah.
And none of them have done anything. No, so I mean, is there any reason to think that this would follow a different trajectory for the Bearcats?
Right. And it will be. That'll be used against them. Like, do you really think they can compete against Georgia? Like, do you really think Iowa can compete against Georgia? Nobody's right. going to ask that. They're just going to win the Big Ten and get in if you know, or if they win the Big Ten, that is. But we saw last year, I mean, you never want to. We have no choice but to kind of compare, look at the mid-major teams from like over a multi-year period because they don't get as many chances against the power teams. But Cincinnati matched up physically with Georgia last year. Like nobody's yeah. matched up physically with Georgia this year. And like obviously once, what was his name? Hudson, the tackle, got ejected near halftime of that bowl game last year. You know, the offensive line, you know, the backup came in and got kind of blown up. And that is what it is. But, you know, they made as many plays as they allowed against Georgia and they had the game won. They needed like one more play in the fourth mm-hmm. quarter and they would have won the game. And that's different Georgia team. Although, I mean, it was a team that had a healthy JT Daniels.
I was going to say, so, yeah. And George Pickens.
And George
yeah.
Pickens.
Yeah.
So, you know, that might have been a better Georgia offense than what we currently see. But like, they competed physically and we know not a lot of teams can do that. And then they went to Notre Dame this year and stomped Notre Dame like. They're for real. They're maybe not a top three team. They're definitely a top 10 team. Like Iowa would have made the playoff in 2015 when they were like 40th or whatever in SP Plus. Like they've cleared the bar they need to clear. And if they win out in the AAC, which I mean, the odds still don't really say they will. They, you know,
right.
every week is a loss opportunity. Like if they win out in the AAC, like I've seen more than enough and we'll talk ourselves out of it all the same.
Right. If we zoom out for a second, Cincinnati obviously is on the rise. They had a very high profile win. One of the things that Dan and I have been talking about a lot lately is teams that are undervalued, if only because they got off to a bit of a bumpy start. Mm-hmm. And he's got a theory that Vegas is going to like overcompensate or be somewhat blinded to some schools. I don't, maybe Oklahoma is a bad example, but they're one that kind of comes to mind after a bit of a rocky start. Are there any teams that jump out to you and looking through your numbers that you feel are genuinely being undervalued at this point? Maybe they've got things going in a good direction, but the books have not caught up to that yet.
I think the books are starting to catch up a little bit on Ohio State.
Yeah.
I don't think conventional wisdom is quite there yet. We're going to kind of ignore them until they come back around and they beat Penn State or whatever. But like I did say, like I think SP Plus is kind of undervaluing Georgia and Alabama a little bit, but it is still probably noteworthy that Ohio State has now tied Alabama. Like they're just like a hundredth of a point behind them for a second in SP Plus after the last 2 weeks. And again, I mean, Akron and Rutgers, you know, they right. have to do it against real teams and they will. But, you know, I did remember, you know, when we had one of our SB Nation shows back in 2014, where we all just talked to each other on Google for a while and then mm-hmm. uploaded it to the internet. It was,
yeah.
it was heady times.
Yeah.
But I do remember like sometime in October, we were talking about a topic similar to this. And I was like, my numbers really like Ohio State. And we were like, wow, well, you know, they Barrett stinks. They lost to Virginia Tech. Like they don't really have it, but they were winning every game by like 50. And they did that for yeah. like six straight weeks. And then we started to realize like, oh, I think Ohio State might be really good. And there's very much a chance that that happens again. They still have to, I mean, even the number three team in the country, I don't know if you get all the way through the Big Ten East slate without slipping up once. It's a really, really good division this year. So maybe that knocks them out anyway. But if you're asking me, like, outside of Alabama and Georgia, who would I trust the most to beat any other team in the country in a given week? I'd probably have a very boring answer and lean Ohio State.
Yeah, no, it's not a bad. Especially, I think Travion Henderson is healthy and
the defense
go,
seems yeah. like at least organized now. Again, like Rutgers and Akron, but they're not just suffering stupid breakdowns anymore.
Yep, correct. And Joe Moorhead isn't calling plays against them with an Oregon offense that can't even throw the ball downfield that well and winning that game. I want to stay on that topic, not Oregon. Please, not Oregon. I want to stay on the topic just of quarterback play, because this has been a fascinating year. The guys we thought would be in a group of top-level quarterbacks, including DJ Uiagalelei, including, I guess, Hudson Card at Texas, I guess including, like, Sam Howell and Spencer Rattler. Like, it has been a very unexpected year, depending on your level of enthusiasm for Bailey Zappe, I guess, early on going into the year. Do you attribute the lack of, I like the word, killers at the top of this quarterback group? I mean, all due respect, obviously, like Jake Haener and Malik Willis, guys like that, have had good seasons. Kenny Pickett. But I don't know what we believe in terms of this last decade. Every year has had 3, 4, 5, 6 guys. We were just like, man, video game numbers week after week. They're changing how the position is viewed entirely. Is there anything that you're looking at specifically to say, like, I don't know, there's something in the water here?
Well, I think for a few years now, defenses have slowly caught up. I mean, that's just how this works. So, like, the cycle is, it spins back around to the defense at some point. And so the spread revolution, or whatever we're calling it, I think defenses just have a better understanding of what you do to stop college football offenses in 2021. And I think part of that is what we've seen a lot against Oklahoma this year. The whole, you know, stop the air raid by dropping 8 into coverage and forcing them to settle. I think we're seeing that a lot more broadly. So I do think it's still evolving a little bit. But I think the biggest difference, I think the last couple of years, we didn't really notice that defenses had adjusted all that much, because you had this uniquely, wonderfully talented LSU offense with a number one pick that just clicked all of a sudden at quarterback, plus Edwards-Helaire and all these receivers, Jamar Chase, et cetera. Because they were so absurdly talented, they still had the ability to win all their matchups and put up video game numbers. And then last year, Alabama even one-upped them, you know, with their ridiculous cast. But those guys left LSU, and LSU is very average now. Those guys left Alabama. Alabama's obviously not average, but they're still not quite as deadly. I think it was just that there isn't that one team that has all the talent and all the perfectly matured weapons, and therefore the defenses are landing a few more blows. Oklahoma, you know, their offensive line is probably as mortal as it's been in a few years, and their skill core is still really good, but it's not the best they've had. And so suddenly you're able to prevent big plays and force Spencer Rattler to throw 7-yard passes and all that. And so, yeah, I don't think it's like a sudden change. I know people talked about lack of spring practice last year and how that maybe affected the defenses more. I mean, maybe, but I do think this is just an ongoing trend that we don't have a specific offense to exploit this year, except maybe Ohio State's. Again, their skill core is crazy. And as soon as, you know, and Stroud is getting more experience, so by the end of the year, they might be there. But I think that's the biggest issue.
Who's ascending in a way that perhaps you weren't expecting, or your number? I don't know how to separate you. I almost treat SP Plus like sourdough starter. Like, it's just this thing that you're constantly feeding that's making beautiful, beautiful things. Like, who, like Oregon State, are you a believer? Syracuse, are you a believer? Baylor, are you a believer? Like, there's all these teams who are, I think, out of the limelight, but clearly ascending. Where is your belief with that class of teams?
I do use my numbers as kind of a backup. Like, what do I think about this, or do I really believe this? And and I'll fill in with the numbers. I do think I always root for the MAC team if they're playing a P5 team. So I'm happy Western Michigan beat Pitt, but that was, like, from a numbers standpoint, a pretty, what we'll call it, unjust win. Like, from a stat standpoint, that was a game Pitt wins most of the time. And if Pitt had won that game, they would be 5-0 right now. Mm-hmm. They're 13th in SP Plus. They looked fantastic against the Georgia Tech team that was starting to look a lot better the last couple of weeks. They beat a Tennessee team that might be a lot better than we thought. Although, you know, we'll see. Now that they're not playing Missouri's run defense, we'll see how that goes. Right, yeah. But like, suddenly you look at their resume. I mean, New Hampshire and UMass is whatever, but beating Tennessee, beating Georgia Tech by 31, like, that's kind of impressive. And if they were 5-0 right now, I think we'd really, like, people are already hopping on the Kenny Pickett bandwagon, but I think like, we would be looking at them very, very differently if they had, if there was a little more justice in the statistical world, I guess. But the other team is Arizona State. I don't trust Arizona State at all. Like, they're crazy volatile. And they're not going to finish 11-1 like you need to, but just week to week, they are terrifying and explosive and crazy fun. And I like those teams.
Okay, fair enough. Final question is just about this weekend in general. You mentioned Wake Syracuse games either at the top that you mentioned. I mean, you mentioned Penn State, Iowa as well,
yep.
But around the sport, both in terms of your own curiosities and what SP Plus is projecting, like if you're making up your Saturday schedule, what should it include?
Well, South Dakota State, Southern Illinois.
Obviously, go Jacks.
Obviously,
yep.
Clearly. Villanova, Solar James piece. Madison.
Uh-huh.
It actually really is a crazy week at the FCS level. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Beyond that, I mean, obviously, I mean, LSU is a very volatile situation right now. They really, really need to turn things around immediately or it's not going to happen. So that's interesting. But Michigan, Nebraska. I mean,
yes.
That, like, Michigan is back to like being on the doorstep again. And I saw like FPI has them as like a 34% chance of making the playoff. And this is a perfect situation for Nebraska to actually relax and not have to, like, everything's not going to be a referendum on them for a week. Mm-hmm. And they can just relax and play. And they're a really solid football team. A football team that can't win close games to save their life, clearly.
No.
But like play for play, very dangerous, very athletic team. And this feels like a good opportunity for them to go in and then, you know, relax for once.
Do you have numbers on the Patriot League?
Hell yes, I do.
Oh, my God. Give me some Pat League numbers.
Can we get some nuggets here? Because we
there's actually, if you, I've been sharing a spreadsheet with a 2021 SP Plus with FCS and D2 and D3 rankings this year.
Good hell.
Because I figured out I can actually do a pretty serviceable job using just points scored and allowed. Therefore, I can use it all the time. But right now, currently, week 6 FCS.
It's got to be Holy Cross, I think.
Let's sort by conference. We're looking at Holy Cross did fall 18 spots last week. They were up to 22nd for a minute. Now
really?
They're 40th. Fordham is 76th.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Lafayette is 90th. Colgate's 101. Georgetown 110. Bucknell 111. And poor Lehigh, which can't score a touchdown to save its life. 124th.
Wow. How many points do you give Georgetown for playing at home?
the hornet's nest that is multi-sport field. Yeah.
Actually, I need to play with that because I got curious at like the D2 or 3 level if there was a difference. And it's really only instead of like 2.5 at FBS, it's like 1.7. I think I still use 2.5 for FCS, but maybe I shouldn't do that.
Yeah, it's still a pretty regional. The conferences are made up pretty regionally in a lot of the smaller divisions. So it's not like traveling across the country necessarily. Although you can move around in the Big Sky a bit. You can move around.
I was about to say, and if you're like a even slightly Western school at the D2 level, you're going to have to go to like Washington to find games. So,
yeah, that's true.
I have one final question for you, Bill, and it's something that Dan and I discussed offline earlier this week. You know, coming into the 21 season, every preview magazine, folks such as yourself, I mean, we did it too. Returning production was kind of the stat du jour because everyone brought back so much.
Yeah.
Super seniors and 18 starters was very much a commonality across all of college football, not just Power Five, but across the board. Where is everyone? Why is nobody good? Why does it feel like there are only two good teams and everybody else is scraping and clawing, just trying to get to 3 or 4 or 5 or anywhere inside the top 15. Have we achieved maximum parity now because we've also achieved maximum returning production?
I mean, I do think it is funny right now. I mean, there are like 13 teams that could technically get a case to be number 3 right now. And I don't remember that happening all that often, but it is, I do think that was part of it. We didn't know exactly what the effects were going to be heading into this season, but we knew that like in theory that could even, you know, the playing field in a lot of ways, it could hopefully produce high quality football, which I think if you ignore the quarterback position, it has. And I do think that's part of the deal, too. Alabama and Georgia are a step ahead in part because the other teams that could keep with them are had just enough change over at just the right spots to hold them back. But it's funny going back and looking at the the top of the returning production list. That was a big thing in the offseason. You know, so many teams above 90% of my formula and whatnot. And, you know, are they going to be able to improve at a really high level, or do you top out? Do you hit your head on your ceiling, so to speak? And looking at the top of the returning production rankings, Miami was 12th. Hadn't really. Now, you know, obviously De'Aaron King isn't De'Aaron King, and mm-hmm. you know, the injuries being what they are, they haven't really necessarily been that team, but that clearly has not helped them. But Rutgers at ninth, maybe it's helped them a little bit. Sure. Arizona State being third, it's helped. I think it's absolutely helped them. Like Central Michigan, maybe Wyoming, maybe it's been very hit or miss as to whether returning all that production actually makes you better. Minnesota was 17th, hasn't really helped them all that much.
No,
but. It has been interesting. There have been unexpected or just very random effects as to who benefited from it, who really hasn't. And, you know, next year we go back to normal and none of it matters, I guess.
None of it matters. Again, his name is Bill Connolly from ESPN.com. Bill, give us one interesting factoid, perhaps that may only interest you, that you're going to be watching for this weekend.
Well, the immediate, and this is not a unique one because I saw Felica and the AP both had it, but it's still stuck in my mind that what was it, 1962, the last time we had two top five Big Ten teams playing each other, and neither was Michigan or Ohio State. That's the one. It is interesting that, you know, Penn State or Iowa is going to be in really good shape after this week, and Cincinnati is potentially going to be number four after this week, and that's. I don't know. It's October. Everything, you know, nothing really happens until November, but this is a very weird and interesting year.
Bill Connolly, thank you as always for your time. We'll talk soon.
Thank you.
All right, Dan, that does it for WSV News Radio. It's the Solid Verbals Friday News broadcast. Don't forget to go on out to verballers.com if you'd like to check out our Patreon. Don't forget to go to solidverbal.com if you'd like to get your hands on one of the few remaining t-shirts that we have available. Just look for the big old yellow banner at the very, very top of the screen. And last but certainly not least, check us out tomorrow morning, solidsaturday.com. We do a 1 hour broadcast starting at 11 a.m. Eastern time on the YouTube channel. Get you ready for all the games, Dan. That's all I got.
That's all I have.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrandt, and for our guest of honor, Bill Connolly from ESPN. We'll talk to you all this weekend. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.